Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, and Dr. Katie Eastman. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth and Katie.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Best Ever You Show. We're so happy that you're here with us. We have a great guest with us. We have Elle Sompras with us. She's from the New Hollywood. And, you know, we're just going to get set here for a great hour to learn all about Elle and introduce her to our network. But in the meantime, we have our co-host, Dr. Katie Eastman, who's with us today. How are you, Dr. Katie?
Well, I've been on mother duty, taking care of a sick child for a week, and then I'm doing okay. She's getting better, and I'm just grateful she's getting better.
Yeah, we missed you on Tuesday, but we totally understand. We talked about you at the beginning of the show and just said, poor Kelly is not feeling so great, is she?
No, she's doing better, though, and we're really grateful it was not the flu because it has been going around here.
Oh, yeah.
So we're on the mend, and yeah, we're in a healing mode.
That's the worst flu, boy. I'm still not feeling 1,000% better. Just it lingers. It's really weird. Takes your energy. It's an energy-zapping flu this year.
Yeah, it really is. So we've been doing a lot of complementary care methods to try and get our energy back. Yeah, it's really challenging.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, the weather's challenging here today in Maine. I don't know who decided to make it 55 degrees with, 50 to 60 mile an hour winds, but that's what we've got.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It went from like 0 degrees to 55 and incredible, incredible winds. I can't even believe the weather. It's warm. It's a plus. It's warm.
Or pull the old chaise lounge out there and hang out in the wind.
Isn't that pathetic when 55 degrees is warm? Sad. That's just sad. My pathetic old California self. That's just sad. Anyway, all right. Yeah, well, all right, Elle. And Elle, our guest, of course, is from California, so she's giggling, right?
Yeah, it's really. Like 75
here
today.
What? No, seriously, it's 75 there?
Yeah, we're having an absolutely perfectly gorgeous day.
I always mock people when they say that.
I know.
All right, well, put the sun on JetBlue and go from Long Beach to Boston and bring it to us. We need some sunshine and some nice weather. But anyway, on to more important things here other than the weather. We need to do our show. And we to those listening along, I want to direct you to Elle's website so you can, people like to look at websites while they're listening on air. It's inspired-success.com. And if you want to Google her or look her up on Facebook, it's facebook.com/inspiredsuccess. And her name is Elle Sompras. You spell that S-O-M-P-R-E-S on the last name there. So L is E-L-L-E. So thank you for being with us. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, tell us, we collaborate a lot with everybody from the New Hollywood, but I was wondering if you might take a moment and just tell us about the New Hollywood so everybody knows what that is and that'll get us kind of started.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so we're a women's goal group, and we also do a lot of philanthropic work and community outreach and things. So we support one another. It's, kind of like to say it's women supporting women. So especially, worldwide, but especially in Hollywood, there can be a lot of cattiness and competitiveness rather than collaboration.
No.
We're women that are working together to support one another in achieving what we want to in life, and then also reaching out, like I said, into the community and doing things of, philanthropy to help the world be a brighter place.
Right. Yeah, I can't imagine Hollywood having any kind of
no
passionate, non-loving behavior. Can you, Katie? No.
No, but, one of the things that I love about this is it's not just Hollywood.
Yes, I said it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And one of the things I was going to ask, Elle, is how do you find like-minded women?
Oh, that's a great question. And interestingly enough, I was having a conversation with somebody about this back home I'm from originally from Columbus, Ohio, so more out your way, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And I was just having a conversation with her last night because she's lived in Chicago and out in L.A. a couple times and, you know, been back in Columbus. And just that building a network, and she's like, you know, that's, you know, she's a very outgoing person. She's an actress as well. And she's like, how do you connect with people and really find that support group of people who aren't tearing you down but are instead building you up? And, you know, she's like, did you have a strategic plan? And I said, you know, that's really interesting because I can't say that I had a plan in place, but I would say it was much more of a mindset. You know, when I moved specifically out here to L.A., I didn't know anybody. And so it would have been really easy for me to just grab onto people, just anybody that would, you know, have me around and, you know, be able to, just so I wouldn't be alone. And just, and I really staked a claim before I left and said, look, this is my life and I'm going to design it how I choose to. So I'm going to really put it out there for my needs. What I like is, you know, inspiring people, people who are spiritual, people who are open-minded and empathetic and care about people in the world. You know, so I was like, I'm going to really wait and be patient for those people to show up in my life. And, you know, I started connecting and, you know, putting myself in situations. For instance, I go to Agape International Spiritual Center, which is a great place to meet like-minded people. You know, anybody who goes to, you know, their church or spiritual center or taking classes, showing up at workshops and seminars that are going to have people that are interested in the same types of things you are, taking classes, you know, just getting involved, I think, and that's why I do a lot of volunteer work, too, because you tend to find and meet people who are interested in that same type of mindset, that same type of work. Doesn't mean you're going to like and connect with everybody, but I feel that I've been more likely to connect with those people by doing what's really in my heart and what I'm all about, and then finding people who are about that same thing.
So bring us to the point where you met Brianna, because Brianna Brown is just one of the wonderful souls and just been a huge part of my life over the past 5 years with Best Ever You. And I was just wondering if you might talk about how you met her.
Sure, absolutely. It's kind of interesting, back to Agape. So a guy that I met at Agape, and initially we thought, oh, you know, we'll go out on a date. And it was just never really a romantic connection, but we connected as friends. And so we continued to be friends. And then he met a girl who is now his wife and mother of his child, and they have a great relationship. She was a part of the New Hollywood. And I was still relatively new to L.A. and had said, and this was the interesting thing, is I had, you know, when I early on moved here, met a group of girls that a lot of them were great, but there was a girl in the group that was super drama and always causing problems and flipping out on people, and I pulled away from it. And so Julie heard me talking about that, yeah, I thought I'd met this great group of people, but again, holding to my truth, I stepped away from what wasn't working for me instead of it, by convenience, staying within it. So Julie was like, you know, I have this great group, and I really think you would fit well. The more I get to know you, it just seems like this resonates with who you are, who they are. I think it would be a great match. And so she introduced me to the New Hollywood and Brianna.
That's
wonderful.
Isn't that, Katie?
Yeah. Wow. There are so many great lessons in that story. You know, it's that first meeting with the guy that you thought you were meeting for one purpose, but really it was another. And this chain of events that led you to, and what I loved what you said, is holding to your truth. All the choices you made brought you to that place.
Yeah.
And I think those are really valuable lessons. Where did you learn about that?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So I would say I've been studying personal development for over 20 years at this point. I started, you know, back, gosh, when I was around 21, 22, I started reading things like The Course in Miracles and, you know, Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra and just a lot of my type of mentors. And, you know, I struggled with self-esteem a lot as a child and a teenager. And, you know, I had this facade of confidence, but inside I did not feel confident at all. And for whatever reason, I was able to fake it to a degree, but I didn't have to. So I kind of went on this seeking process and, you know, studied different religions and studied just all sorts of different things, and then just continued to work on my insides and who I am and my happiness, and more realized that when we get into people, because I was a people pleaser and still have to be conscious of, you know, not doing that, because of course I want to make people happy, but people pleasing is more, oh, I'm just going to do whatever it is to earn other people's attention. I'm going to do whatever it is I think will make somebody else happy, even if I'm sacrificing who I am in my true center. So I started realizing, you know, over time and through trial and error and, you know, going back and forth, it's just the more that I really got in touch with who I am deeply in my soul and again, just my center of truth, the more that it just, I naturally made people happy as well. And the people that didn't seem to resonate with me or I didn't resonate, you know, it was just like easier to sort of just let that flow by rather than, why don't you like me? What's going on? What's happening? You know, and again, we're human beings and I don't think that, I mean, I think people can put on this facade of, well, I don't care what anybody thinks. I think we all kind of care to a degree, but I think when we care too much and we start basing our identity on what other people think about us, that's when we run into problems. We've got to be very clear about what we think of us and how I want to live my life and be proud of who I am so that when I'm putting that out to the world, if somebody crinkles their nose or like, she's weird, I'm like, that's okay, it's me.
Do you serve as an advisor within the New Hollywood to the various women? You know, let's say somebody gets rejected for a part or, you know, who knows what can happen out there, you know. Do you help, you know, with your skill set, do you help the other women in the group and teach them what you know?
Yeah, you know, we all, I would really say, I mean, such an amazing group of women, and we really do all help each other, and we really do all have this outreach. We actually have a goal partner each quarter, and it changes each quarter, you know, and I've been in the New Hollywood for many years now, so you get to know different people, and we go on adventures, and we do electives, which are, you know, just like if you have a writing group or a running group or support around something. So, yes, I definitely offer support. And then within the group, and I receive a lot of support as well, thankfully, but within the group, I am also the VP of goals. So I really serve as a kind of a touch point, a structuring point to when people need support around, I'm getting off track, or what can I do about these limiting beliefs that are getting in the way of me being able to accomplish my goals? Because really, all of our success starts from within, and so I really do offer an area of support around that for sure.
So to be a member of New Hollywood, is it just actresses, or is it people and then doing all kinds of things in that area?
Yeah, it's, you know, that has expanded over the years. I mean, I think, you know, initially it was some actresses coming together, and then it was like, oh, some musicians and producers and screenwriters and, you know, filmmakers and, you know, people in Hollywood, voiceover actors, speakers. You know, I'm a speaker and a coach, and I do voiceover as well. And, you know, so it's expanding, though, into other arenas of just women who are out there doing all sorts of things in the world but supporting one another and getting to our highest good.
I wondered if you did voiceovers because your pronunciation of your words is perfect.
Oh, thank you.
It is. Very good. It's, I'm loving it. I'm like, I think she does voiceovers. We have a gal who we work with, Randy Kay, who does the voiceovers for, you know, our promos and things like that for Best Ever You. So we love those voices.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, when people's voices do all sorts of crazy things and they have characters and
yeah.
And I'm curious. You said it, so I'm opening it up. Do you have any characters that you do, or do you have any promos that you've done? I know you do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I haven't got into the character work quite as, you know, just from the cadence of my voice and the tone that I live in, I tend to be more either promo or commercial or, you know, because it's more the warm inviting, you know, type of, you know, or if people are like, we kind of want, you know, not overtly sexy, but that little bit of, you know, kind of, again, warmth in there, a bit of sensuality, which you'll find in like car commercials or beer commercials or anything that's really targeted a lot towards men.
I think it's so fascinating that I had Randy Kay on, I don't know, it was months ago now, and she goes into this character and you would never in a million years know it's her.
Yeah, I know. Some people can really, really, it's that hasn't been my expertise or where I've gone with, but I think it'd be fun to play with.
Yeah, like Seth MacFarlane, you know, he does all those different voices on Family Guy and everything. That's cool. But, well, that's neat that you're doing that. And is there? Do you also act? Are you in movies and screen, you know, and plays and things like that too?
You know, it's never been my focus, but I enjoy it. And it's funny because I was just talking to this girl that I was speaking of from back home last night about the interest level has come back up. It's kind of, it was something like, oh, I really wanted to do when I was younger. I didn't know much about it. Then, ironically, when I got into speaking about the same time, I was like, I really want to act. So I started taking acting classes for the first time, you know, in my 30s. And that's not usually when people start acting. But I just started doing it for a hobby. But even, you know, if it's a hobby and it's something I'm going to commit to, like, you know, if I'm going to do a play, because I remember my coach saying, you know, oh, people don't like to hear it's a hobby, it's a business. But if I'm going to do a play or show up for a film, I'm going to treat it as a business, even though it's not been my primary focus or ambition to turn into my career. I've done a little theater, I've done a little indie film, and I really enjoy it. I love getting into character and doing different parts, and I haven't done it in a while, but I had really major knee surgery where I couldn't walk for a very, very, very long time, and so, you know, I had to kind of step. I'd started taking some classes again, had to step away from it, and now that I'm fully healed and feeling like I have my movement back, I'd like to get involved in that again.
Yeah. Good. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. I'm wondering, Elle, when you're working with people or helping, supporting other members of New Hollywood, what do you come across the most that's the most challenging for women?
Yeah, and, you know, I would say I experienced this, oh gosh, just with the New Hollywood, with friends, with my clients, with whomever, is I really think that there is maybe a misconception around what self-love is. I know I had it for a long time. I think that a lot of people, if you say, do you love yourself, they go, sure, of course I do. I'm a great person, you know, and they think that self-love is really an opinion that you hold about who you are, and they don't realize that self-love is an action. It's really more of a verb. It's how are you treating yourself? How do you handle things when there is disappointment, when there is rejection, when you are having a bad day? We all have them. I don't care. The happiest person in the world has days that they're like, oh, life is hard, you know, and they're just feeling in those doldrum blues. So it's really about how what are you saying to yourself? How are you treating yourself? Are you being forgiving of your missteps, or do you beat yourself up? Are you being gentle with yourself when things are a little rough, or you're not feeling on top of your game, or somebody disappoints you or rejects you or lets you down? You know, do you say, gosh, nothing ever works for me, I'm so stupid, I'm never going to make it, nothing's ever going to blah, 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 blah. And I say to people, that's not love, that's abuse. And I hope you wouldn't let anybody else talk to you that way in your life and put you down and tell you you're never going to amount to anything and nothing's ever going to work and you suck and blah, blah, blah. You know, why would you let anyone else speak to you that way? And I hope you can tune into stop letting yourself treat yourself that way. And so I think the more that people really understand self-love as an action and not just a thought, it makes a difference.
You know, I think a lot of people spend time in that zone, and you've got something right on the front of your website where I think a lot of women exist in, and that's you put up this positive front to the outside world, but mm-hmm. internally you're just almost ready to cry. Or you are crying and nobody knows it, or you're, you know, so many women are masters
mm-hmm.
at that.
And sometimes feel like they're the victor because they're doing that, and I just think it's very destructive. And I don't think, obviously, you're not going to go out and cry to the whole world and everybody you see, tell them your story and what's going on, but you need to have those one or two or three or whatever, you know, a few confidants that you can express, like, I am having a hard time. I am really struggling right now. I know that there's a front we somewhat have to put in this world, and it's unfortunate, but sometimes you have to get through the day, but you need to have some support around you that you can be truly authentic and say, I'm really having a tough time. Can you just listen?
That's so hard for some women. It really for anyone, not just women. But taking that first step and reaching out and saying I'm vulnerable
is
a really, really difficult thing. And they've held a mask or they've worn a mask for years. And I see it in working with cancer patients, with women with cancer.
Yeah.
Boy, it really rocks their world when they lose their hair.
Yeah.
And that is such a metaphor for a lot of women, of loss of control. Do you see that, a fair amount of control being an issue?
Absolutely. I was just having, I have a, you know, private coaching clients as well as, you know, group courses and trainings that I do. But one of my private clients, I was just saying that earlier this week on Monday night, that, you know, I think a lot of us, when we hear, like, we are being controlling or you have control issues, it's like, no, I don't, because we don't want to be described that way. But essentially, I think we all do to some degree, because, again, if we feel completely out of control, it's like, how am I going to get through the day and how am I going to? So we keep trying to pull back and be completely, oh, I'm going to hold everything in and be in control, when really I think we have more control over our world when we are being vulnerable. It takes so much strength to be a vulnerable person, and we tend to think I'm being strong by acting like everything's just okay. And that's really what it does, is you're strong outside, but it's weakening you inside.
You know, this is a little slightly off topic. I'm going to take us in a different direction for a minute. But as I get introduced to each one of you in the New Hollywood, sort of one by one, and you come on the show or you write something for the site or whatever, I am just so always fascinated by all of you. I just think it's the neatest group of people. And it just sort of, reignites my spirit for you guys every time I talk to a member of the New Hollywood. You guys each have just such special gifts. And if you were going to say how you all met, how did it just started with Brianna and then grew from there?
It's really fascinating, and I have to say I completely agree with you about the girls that are in the New Hollywood.
Yeah, or women or whatever. Girls, women.
Yeah,
you know,
I call them girls.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, I call them girls.
Girls,
yeah.
Women, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
We all.
Eventually
but
you'll be a bunch of grandmas. It'll be really cute.
Yeah.
Or moms or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily mean that you all will have kids or whatever, but, you know, just
sure.
I'm thinking a bunch of, you know, like, 70, 60, 70, 80 year old.
Exactly.
You know, the old Hollywood.
We'll still be rocking it. No, but I'm continually astounded by the women of this group. I mean, just their talent, their heart, their willingness to really, really grow as a person themselves, as well as, again, extend what they've learned and who they are to not only within the group, but to the world as a whole. So, I mean, I embrace what you're saying and agree with you. And the way that we've come together is, yes, I mean, it really started with Brianna having a vision, you know, before I knew her, of bringing women together that would support one another, because she, as I, as possibly you and many other women, and I'm sure men out there too, but women especially can be, again, very catty. As you're growing up, they put you down, talk behind your back, steal your boyfriend, and you're growing up, and that bullying, which I'm glad is being brought to the forefront more these days. I'm very sad that things are happening, but I'm glad people are talking about it, because bullying has always existed. I was bullied relentlessly by certain people.
Yeah.
Did you say you were too?
Oh, incredibly. Yes,
yeah.
Oh,
horrible, even
too.
As an adult.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the more that we can talk about that and help people understand, like, you know, that, I mean, that campaign that they did, you know, it does get better. But to help them learn, help both the bullies and the victims learn to how to alter that and love themselves and not have that need to put others down. And if you're the one being put down, to how to persevere through that. But, you know, so Brianna had that experience as well and realized she wanted to bring together some people. So it was a very small group initially, of just some personal friends and people she knew, and they started, I believe, and I'm sorry, Brianna, if you're listening and I'm misquoting this, but I believe they started with The Artist Way of, you know, reading a book and kind of discussing it and doing things and helping each other work together, and the group has evolved and grown, and then the way that it grows is, inviting in new people, which then the groups, there's standards of which who we choose. It has to be like a length of time you've known the person and why you want to bring them in. And so people are elected to be invited in, and then there's sort of an interview process. So the members will say, you know, people will come up and say, I want to be a part of this or whatever. And if we know them or, you know, get to know them, and we feel like, because, you know, we don't want it to just be people who, I need you, but I really have nothing to bring, or we don't want people to bring, like, energy of, I'm going to take over and I'm going to bring everything, but, you know, I'm never going to allow myself to receive. It's really got to be that energetic exchange of you want to offer and receive, and offer and receive, so we can all work together as a group.
Isn't there a good lesson right there, Katie, in not immediately allowing them to be members?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yes, 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 yes. And I love that you started with The Artist's Way, too. That's one of my favorites. I love
oh,
that
great.
Book. And absolutely what you're saying, Elizabeth, because, gosh, we are so good at making excuses for other people's behavior. And I love what Maya Angelou says. She says, you know, how they behave is who they are, and how many times as women we, oh, well, they're going through a hard time, or, oh, well, they're doing this, or, oh, well, and we make a list of excuses, and then eventually things implode because we've made those excuses. So I love the fact that you all are very clear about what you're looking for, what you need, who you are, and there has to be an exchange, and not just a, well, we feel sorry for her, and so we're going to let her into the group kind of thing.
Like if someone's going through a hard time, but they're in that place of ownership of, like, I'm looking for solutions, that's a completely different energy than I'm going through a hard time, and I'm just going to take it out on everybody else and, you know, be angry. And
it's the new Hollywood marathon. Run as fast as you can in the other way. No.
Exactly. And, you know, I have compassion for anybody who's struggling.
Sure, I'm just
it's
teasing.
Just getting into a space of, again, that 100% responsibility for your life, because we've all gone through hard things and we've all been treated terribly and continue to be sometimes. And usually when someone treats us bad, it's because something's going on in them. And, you know, it's like, but the problem is if somebody treats me bad and then I take that on, so then I treat other people bad. And, you know, it becomes a bad ripple rather than that whole pay it forward thing. Somebody does something good, and, you know, it all depends. It's your choice, and it's your energy. And, you know, we always say it's not to be elitist, to, like, keep people out. It's just that it's a very intimate group. We are very honest. We are very open. We are very vulnerable with one another in our meetings. And that space needs to be sacred and needs to be safe for people to express in that manner, that it's not going to be somebody that goes out and tells everybody else what's, you know, happening in this person's life.
Yeah.
And it's also so important and valuable for us all to remember that we're not helping anyone when we enable them.
Right.
We're not. When we empower people and when we empower ourselves, then we help them make change and then we help build the world in a better way. But if we enable someone to stay stuck, we're not helping them. And we do it so easily when we feel sorry for someone, but we don't need to. We really don't. Care and compassion is very different than enabling.
It very much is. Yeah, it's when you're going into that fix-it mode and, you know, I'm going to do everything for somebody, or I'm going to take care, like you said, of them, and, you know, or to just have compassion and be there to listen. And, yeah, you might have some insight or some, but it's being able to, if they ask for your advice and you offer up something, but then to be able to detach yourself from it, not make it your responsibility to make sure that they fix it, trusting them that it's their responsibility. Just like in my life, it's my responsibility to do what I need to do to take care of myself. But do I need support? Do I look to others to maybe give me a little guidance or to knock me over the head if I'm, you know, like just not seeing things a certain way? And they're like, what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. And just, you know, sometimes people can open our eyes to things, but then it's my responsibility to run with that and do something with it.
Yeah. That's very similar to a conversation I had last night with Brianna. I was on the phone with her for like an hour, and it was really a great conversation that has led to, wouldn't you say, Katie, just quite a lot of change and not immediate, but it wasn't like I got off the phone with her and I'm like, oh, I got to make that change and do that and that, but she kind of reiterated a lot of the things, Katie, that you and I have been talking about for months.
Absolutely. And I think leadership, and I really want to hear Elle's comment about leadership, because I know she's done some work with this, but it is when you're a leader and your things are growing and organizations go through developmental phases. They grow at different phases, and each time you have to reevaluate your mission, making sure that everything you're doing is directed towards your mission, and then you have to restructure to handle the growth.
Yeah, and
exactly.
It was just a really nice conversation with her last night that was, you know, it came from the spot of, you know, I know you're leading this, I know you're doing this, I know you're a mom of four boys and everything, but let me show you a few things. And just a kind of a brilliant approach to helping another human being without being condescending, without being unloving, without being it was kind of really neat. You can see all of the New Hollywood at play in a conversation with Brianna.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree, Elle?
Oh, absolutely, definitely.
She comes from her heart and a neat combination of being very brilliant.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I want to ask you, but we're going to come back to leadership in a minute, but
okay.
I'm quick. You can hear me kind of clicking around maybe in the background, and that's because I'm clicking on Elle's website. It's inspired-success.com. And I noticed a new tab on your website called Self-Esteem for Teens. And I really love this because this is kind of a project near and dear to our heart at Best Ever You. We've launched in the past week besteverteens.com, and we have some of the major key, Katie, interrupt me, what do you call them? Major key teen and youth leaders.
Leaders. They're change agents. They're real change agents. They're
incredible.
They have their own directed mission towards improving the world, and they're doing wonderful things. Really wonderful.
Yeah, Girls Above Society, ThinkToday.org, Mean Stinks, The Sparkle Effect. They've all, I love this because within minutes of saying, hey, we're thinking about launching that, they all threw their name in the ring to participate and be advisors and so forth. And I'm wondering if you could tell us why this is a really important topic to you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. And, yes, just to comment on my website, as you probably know as you're clicking around, it's in the middle of being redone. But, hey, life is
isn't everyone.
Yeah.
In the club.
There's some things that have been, like, kind of put up, but there's really nothing there. And
that's
I'm like,
okay. We don't care.
It's easy to go, oh, don't anybody look at it. And I'm like, what's there is there right now. The rest is being redone. You know, you can't always be in perfection. So.
You know what's cool about that? Is it? I can tell you're thinking.
Yeah.
But that's what that is. For people who have, you know, totally non-perfect websites, you can tell they're thinking. That's what I say all the time.
Well,
you're
and I think
about
like,
what
it's like you
there.
Can wait and not put it back up. I mean, I've had a website for years, but it's like you can take it off and make it not live until it's perfect.
But,
and like I said, or I can have what's up there, which still impacts people, and people still tell me, oh, my gosh, I love your homepage, and it so spoke to me, and, you know, and it's like, yeah, the rest hasn't been redone yet, but hey, whatever.
Well, but listen, if you hadn't put that tab up there, we wouldn't be about, you know, about to talk about teens.
Exactly.
And self-esteem.
See, there
so
you go.
It's
always
there's always
opening.
A rhyme or reason to stuff. You just never quite know what it is. But
exactly.
Yeah, I know. So, tell us about teens and self-esteem and why that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah. So as I had touched upon earlier, I know what it's like to be a teenager who, you know, just really did not feel like I had any self-esteem. I grew up in I grew up around abuse, and I in a violent household, and early divorce within the family, and then, neglect from a parent. And just those things affect you and shape you. And as a child, you don't know how to, like, rise above. You don't know how to say, well, I'm going to rationalize this and that I'm still worthy even though I'm getting this treatment. So you take on, and this is a lot of what I do in my teaching, is how much we, they say that our beliefs really tend to be formed before we're, it's around 5 to 7 years old. And at that age, we simply can't do anything but take things super literally. And so we tend to then start going into our high school years, which we all know is such an incredibly vulnerable time. I mean, it's such a time of uncertainty and insecurity. And when people say they want to go back to high school, I'm always like, why?
Why?
I mean, I'd love to go back to high school feeling the way I do now.
Gosh.
I just want to redo the prom, that's all. Everything else, forget it. But I want to go back to wearing the dress.
I'm reliving high school as a mother of four teenage boys. I'm reliving it all from the boy standpoint now.
Right.
Totally hysterical. Oh, my God.
Yes,
totally different
than
girls.
I just have a lot of heart. Oh, gosh. Girls are so emotional at that age. It's just so hard. But, so my heart really just feels drawn to young girls, young boys of that age. And honestly, that's where my speaking career began, because I was working in radio in Columbus, Ohio, and had always known I wanted to, I really want to affect the world in a more, impactful way. I want to be able to get out there and inspire and help people believe in who they are, because I know what it's like to not believe in myself and to feel so low and to feel you know, just like, I mean, again, that the bullying and feeling attacked, and it, as we talked about earlier too, the putting on that facade of confidence and, yeah, okay, I was part of a popular group. No one, I don't think anybody in high school could have, like, pointed me out as, you know, because some people are very meek and then it's like, oh, yeah, they're definitely insecure. I don't know that anybody could have pointed that out, but I think that insecurity and lack of self-esteem shows up in so many different costumes. And, you know, some people are overly bravado. Some people are just kind of doing their thing. Some people are calm and quiet. Some people are very shy and withdrawn. But I think that insecurity can lie within any of us. And again, to bring that, I'm working on a piece right now about taking the shame out of depression because, again, I think it's something that people need to know. A lot of people go through, and it's okay to talk about it and bring it up. And if one person isn't willing to listen or can't handle it, find somebody else. You know, like somebody is going to stop and take you seriously and listen to what you're saying. So self-esteem, I believe, my gosh, I feel like if I could have understood and learned more about that at a younger age, just how powerful that would have been. So I did some self-esteem workshops. Oh, yeah, real quick, I did some self-esteem workshops over, I believe it was the summer, and with Boys and Girls Club, and it was super powerful and great to, you know, and teenagers are a tough, they can be a tough audience because they sometimes just look at you like, what are you talking about? Or kids aren't maybe sometimes, especially if they're struggling with self-esteem, they're not the ones to speak up. Like when you're talking with adults a lot, they're nodding their head or they're laughing or they're interjecting, you know, and they're kind of with you when you're talking. And sometimes teens just sort of cock their head and stare at you. And so you have to really be like clear with what it is you're expressing and saying to them and make it fun for them. And so, you know, when I was working in radio, what did you say?
I said something. It seems like you always have to bring pizza or candy or something.
We made some bracelets and had fun. Exactly. Yeah, you know, you have to do something kind of fun.
You sit here and listen. There's pizza afterwards or something. Some incentive.
Reward, yeah. So, but that's how I first started speaking back in 2003. I started doing mentoring with kids with inner city schools and talking to them about discovering what it is they're passionate about and, you know, their true purpose and what they want to do and how to turn that into a career. So I was doing, like, career mentoring with them and a little anti-drug message mixed in, which was easy because I worked in rock and roll radio. It's kind of, you know, like, makes sense. But that was really the root of where I got started. And then I worked, you know, for the personal development company for years and just always knew that what I was coming back to was that more empowerment type of thing and that I really wanted to make sure that I plug back in and work with the youth because there's just so much struggle there and there's so much power in reaching them at that young of an age.
Katie, is there a human being on the planet that doesn't have self-esteem issues? I mean, is that like a universal truth?
We basically spend our whole life trying to figure what our self-esteem is, frankly, I think. And I, you know, I loved what Elle was talking about, the workshops, and I just think that's so important. And I hope adults are going too, because my experience is I have had very powerful experiences where adults in a kid's life says one small thing that absolutely impacts and rocks their whole world. And like, for example, the guidance counselor was saying to every kid that went through her office, the college you select is the most important decision you'll ever make in your whole life. So all of a sudden, my private practice started filling up with depressed kids, and I couldn't figure out why. And it was because they were taking that to heart. And, oh, my God, can you imagine as adults if every decision we made was the most important in our whole life?
And it's always going to affect everything else you do. You're like, oh, my gosh, that's a lot of pressure.
Boy, dinner time tonight, that's a big decision.
Yeah.
Every single decision you make, that's scary.
Well,
yeah,
funny,
so those, when
you said that, Dr. Katie, it was interesting because when you said that, I was like, oh, I hope she's not saying that's a good thing.
No,
it
gosh.
Such
okay.
a way.
Oh, no.
I
mean, like, Dr. Katie's like, be whatever you want to be and be it well.
Yeah.
Well, and just wanting to remind everyone that, you know, what you say matters.
Oh, God.
And kids, they may not tell you they're listening, but, man, they're listening.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
little sponges. That's what they are, little, gosh, you know. My kids say, everything I know I learned from SpongeBob. <I'm joking. laughs> Like, how do you, I mean, sometimes Quade, my little one, will rattle something off, and I'm like, where did you learn that? SpongeBob, you know, or whatever. So, very funny. Yes, they are dead. So, what you say matters for sure. All right, well, that's really interesting. That's an interesting component about you with teens. I wish you much success in that, and I hope you do some guest blogs for us or something over on Best Ever Teens, because I think I think it's really important.
Absolutely, I'd love to talk to you more about that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about your own blog, if we can, for a minute, because you're pretty cool. Your blog isn't endless words. It's not like you go to your blog and you're there all day trying to read it and decipher it and figure it out what you're trying to say. Sometimes it's just little elisms.
Yes. Yeah, I write, some are articles and then some are just shorter little blurbs because I feel like when people, and, you know, it's a lot of what I do on my Facebook page, but, you know, not everybody is on my newsletter, who's on my Facebook page, who's on my blog. So, you know, I just kind of like circulate things around within there that it's interesting because all I can say is I will literally sit down and say, I just kind of like breathe and get quiet. And I'm like, what needs to be heard today? What needs to be said? And sometimes I've got something, you know, when I wake up, and some days it's just like, I literally sit down and go, I have no idea what I'm writing about today.
When that happens to us, we just write about chocolate.
Right. But when I get quiet, something always comes through, and I don't, you know, it's like, God, is it just energy? I don't know. You know, but it's interesting because then when I write things, and let's just say, you know, my Facebook page or whatever, that if my blog I'm building and, you know, getting that out there. But the comments that'll come back of someone, you know, even if it's just that one person who's like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I needed to hear today. Or when I get private messages that say you have no idea how that just impact, like you said, it's that one thing that you go, ah, that's why I was going to say that. And so those little blurbs, I feel, we don't always have time. I mean, this is, I think we all more increasingly have ADD these days, and, you know, because everything's so instantaneous that people don't always want to sit down and read long things, but if they can get a blurb of perspective or positivity, like you said, a little elism that's just short and goes, oh, that's what I needed today. Perfect. That's what I want to do for people.
I love this one, let your heart break open. Do you by chance have your blog anywhere near you, or do you mind if I read this?
You can go ahead and read it. Yeah, I can pull it up, but I don't have it up at the moment.
Here, every moment, every celebration, every heartbreak, every success, every stumble is yet another opportunity to love more deeply, to awaken your soul and shake you into purely conscious living. Be aware, love yourself, love others, love God, love life. Don't be afraid to feel, and don't let the trials break you down. Allow them to break your heart open so more light can get in.
Yeah.
Mm. Well said. Beautifully said.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's that vulnerable thing again.
Yeah, it really. And I think it's why I share so much from a vulnerable state and about learning to be vulnerable, because I was so unwilling to be vulnerable for so much of my life because I was so hurt, and you know, my self-esteem was low and I was depressed and, again, out there playing like, hey, I'm good, smiling, putting on that happy face, but I was so afraid to be vulnerable because I just couldn't take it. Where now, it's like the more that, again, I've learned to really, truly love myself and I've healed a lot of these old patterns and beliefs and wounds and, you know, come from within me instead of what's happening out in the world all the time. But your heart does break sometimes. I mean, when my father passed, my heart just completely was broken because we had mended our relationship and we were getting on this good path, and then he was suddenly gone at a very young age. And, you know, but to let yourself go through that and to feel that and to recognize then what can I take from this, which I feel I was able to connect with my father in spirit form at a deeper level and be able to love myself the way he had always wanted to love me, because I know he did. He just had his own self-loathing that kept him kind of in a shelter. And so this, I feel, I've started a screenplay actually too called Lessons from Dad, and, you know, just realizing that the love that he wanted to feel for himself, wanted to feel for, you know, or he felt for me and my sister, wanted to express, like, just that kind of sliding doors principle of how much you love yourself and how much you allow the trials to either break you down or break you open, it's going to lead you down one path or another. And when we can really embrace everything that's happening, and then, again, it opens us up to more compassion and to more empathy. It's hard when you're going through it, but now when somebody loses a parent, you better bet I understand it in a way deeper way than I, even though I cared before, I get it now. So when we can look at things like that that happen in our life and go, but I can help people now in a bigger way than I could before I had experienced this. It's good.
Yeah, you know, the loss of a parent is a huge, huge awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a lot of people by surprise. It certainly did me. I mean, I'm a grief counselor. I knew my mom and dad were dying when they were dying. I knew they were going to die, but it did not matter. It rocked me over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of people, they don't expect to be blown away by what happens when they finally do die, even
yeah.
though you know it's coming. And if you don't know it's coming, I can only imagine what you went through. What helped you through that, Elle?
Yeah, honestly, it was being honest with myself. I mean, I had to nurture, and again, I had grown up a lot that when things happened that hurt me or, you know, even if it was a breakup or some friend, you know, slept with my boyfriend, which did happen, you know, and or the guy I was in love with.
That's happened to all of us.
Right, you know, I mean,
yeah.
So those things happen when you're teenagers because teenagers... Yeah. Brains aren't fully formed yet, so, but, you know, and people do silly things, and but when you go through those things, what I would tend to do is feel sad and be upset, but then all I was trying to do was just feel better, like, I got to get back to just, like, okay, I know I'm sad, but keep, you know, you hear that, and these sayings aggravate me so much, keep your chin up, you know, buck up, see the positive in things. Now, some people are like, but you're such a positive person, what do you mean, are you supposed to see the positive, shouldn't I be finding the gratitude? I'm like, yes. And you should also be allowing yourself to just be where you are. And so when I was dealing with the loss of my father, it was when people said, how are you doing? I allowed myself to be like, not well.
Crappy.
I know I'll be okay, but I'm not today. And thank you for reaching out, and thank you for caring, because it means the world to me. And, you know, so expressing my gratitude in that way, but also being honest and being truthful of, you know, And somebody says, can I do something for you? I mean, that's the hardest thing, because we automatically go, no, I'm okay, I'm all right. And I'll even use my example of when I had surgery. I had to say, and I learned a lot about vulnerability through that as well, of just to say, yeah, you know what? I can't do my laundry right now. You know, my mom came out and took care of me for a little while, but when you're on one leg and on crutches and aren't allowed to put any weight on your other leg, you can't carry a laundry basket, and especially mm-hmm. down 18 stairs, which is where my laundry is. So when somebody said, is there anything I can do? I had to say, yeah, you know what? Could you help me walk my dog, or could you help me, you know, do my laundry? And a lot of the girls from the New Hollywood, and well as other friends outside, but kind of got on a rotation of when they would come over and help walk my dog and different people in the neighborhood. And then, you know, I remember one girl, like, I love soup. This is so silly, but it's being able to ask for these things. She came over, and while she was here, she brought me some magazines and did all this stuff. And then she's like, do you need anything? And I'm like, could you just, like, make me a bowl of soup and carry? I can't carry soup.
Wait a minute. El Diva. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I can't carry soup.
No,
but
I'm
see,
asking,
that's the misconception,
I'm teasing,
though, because
yeah,
I'm asking
exactly.
for help. And I know you're teasing, but people think, well, if I ask for help, I'm being a diva. And it's like, I just like soup, and I can't carry soup because I'm going to spill it all over the place.
No, you know what I really want to say right there is actually the opposite of diva. I was just teasing you. What I want to say right there is most people, when they ask for help, feel so guilty on top of it that it compounds
yeah.
the problem. So you're sitting there going, oh, God, I need help. I'm going to ask for it. And then you ask for the help, you get the help, and then you feel guilty. Like, it's
yeah.
the strangest cycle of asking for help. And isn't that wild? Did you ever feel that way? Like,
oh, yeah,
yeah,
but
I need to
I
do my laundry
it.
And cook and clean and whatever.
And I
I'm
did. Of course, I felt
guilt.
A little like, oh, this is so horrible that I have to ask for that. But, or when I needed to talk and I knew that, you know, maybe somebody, like about my father, you know, dying and stuff, and I just needed to, whether it was I needed to talk about memories, good memories of him, or I needed to talk about, regret I had, that, you know, I wish I had this, because that all rushes in your head. I don't care what your situation is, but I wish I could talk to him one more time. I want to pick up the phone. I want to, you know, death brings up a lot of really weird things. But so whether it was I need to talk to you, have some time that I could talk to you, or, you know, can you carry my soup? You do feel a little like unburdening somebody. And what I had to keep reminding myself is, do you feel burdened when somebody reaches out to you? And I don't. When somebody says, hey, Al, I kind of need to work through something. Can I talk to you for a few minutes? Can I ask you, you know, if you're inside, or hey, would you mind helping me do this? You know, it's like, absolutely, because I love you and I care about you and I want to do things, you know. And I think we all feel helpless when somebody loses a parent or has a baby or, you know, like things. People are like, I want to do something. So everybody says, well, if you need anything, let me know. But they don't know
what to
do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously I do advise you, if you can think of something specific to and say, hey, let me come do this for you, it's a little easier for the person to receive the help. But also as us being human beings, don't be afraid when somebody says, is there anything I can do? You know, even if you jokingly say, like, are you serious? You know, will you really help me out with something? And they say, yeah, you know, that lightens the mood a little bit. Great, you know what? I could really use some help with my laundry.
I
know that might be a lot to ask, but could you even just come over and do a load? Or, you know, and then okay. People are going to be like, yeah. And because people like to feel useful. So they're like, great, you just gave me something specific I can do to help you.
That's funny. Yeah, I was thinking about Katie. My husband had both of his hips replaced at the same time. And I was thinking about Katie putting my kids on the bus or whatever. I don't even remember. I was in a fog now. But remember that time, Katie? Remember all those days where you were over here helping? It's like, what can I do?
Yeah.
Do you need me to coordinate dinner? You know, and I'm sitting over here going, I feel so bad asking you for help. But can you take all my kids to school?
Well, yeah, exactly. And what was really good about it is you were specific. And a lot of times what happens, and I remember when my dad died, God, I just wanted to kiss the family that brought the fruit.
Yep.
Because if we got one more baked bean casserole, I was going to vomit. And it was like, God, I know I'm from New England. I know baked beans are a tradition, but please, they are not what you want to eat when you're grieving. And so I finally just said to my mom, Mom, I love your friends, but could you please put it out to them that we want healthy clothes? You know, it's I call it the baked bean phenomena, and I tell everyone when I'm doing grief work, please don't bring baked beans.
No, I love baked beans, so you can bring me baked beans, but not everybody. But I know what you're saying. It's so true, and that's why it's both as the giver and the receiver being willing to be vulnerable and being open and being honest. And, you know, and it's like, then, like I said, for me, it was turning it into, rather, because, okay, I feel guilty that I'm asking for help, or I'm not, but then to instead, like, to reframe it and say, but when others, you know, need something from me, I want to help, and I like when I know specifically what will help them the most. So reframe it that way, and then reframe it into gratitude. Like, thank you so much for doing, because I am very grateful.
Yes.
And I don't need to feel guilty. I can feel grateful.
Well, here's the other phenomenon that goes on when somebody needs help, and that's the, I'm pissed at you for not helping.
Mm-hmm.
I needed help, and you said no, or you ignored me, or you, whatever. People get really pissed. And they, take note for years that follow of who helped them during their crisis. It's wild.
Yeah, because sometimes the people that you think will really be there aren't. And then some people that you would have never expected to be there totally are, and you're like, well, this is weird.
Well, and sometimes you learn when you dig a little bit is the reason they weren't is because they were giving you privacy or they didn't know what to do and they didn't know how to ask and they don't know how to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times we make assumptions they're just not caring, but sometimes they just don't know how.
Yeah, and that was a big lesson for me as well, is, you know, because I did. I had those moments of, well, how dare you? And you're like, you didn't know.
Right.
And then I started processing a little further and said, you know, some people, that's just, like, there was a specific friend who I'm very, very close with still, but at the time I was just shocked that she didn't reach out at all, like, during, you know, either one of those things, my father or the surgery. And I was like, what in the world? And they came very close to one another. And I was like, what on earth? How can we be such good friends? And she just doesn't seem to care. And then I processed it and said, her role and her beauty in my life just shows up in a different way, and that's okay too.
Right.
She doesn't,
yeah, exactly.
again, maybe feel comfortable in that or doesn't know what to do, or like you said, giving pride. I don't know why she's doing what she's doing. Why am I assuming that the reason she's doing it is this?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. And then the other thing, just one more thing while we're on this topic, are the people that show up that you would have never expected in a million years. Like my
yeah.
kids are still talking about the neighbors down the street, the Rohanas, who made this like elaborate like 10-course meal for us while my husband was sick.
Nice.
And I mean, my son is still like, can we go down there and eat? Can we go down there and eat?
Hey, I'm going to come to Maine and go there and eat.
No, they seriously remember it. And he rides the bus with the kids. So he's always like, your mom makes the best rigatoni and meatballs and garlic bread and everything. And I'm like, do I starve you or what? That's so funny.
I love it. Yeah, I was really touched by a guy that was really just more of a, you know, hey, let's go out and party and watch football because we're both Buckeye fans. And, you know, like that was really just more of our relationship. It wasn't like he was ever a confidant or, you know, we were just fun time friends, you know, kind of thing, who, when my father died, was so present and would so just send me a text or call me occasionally and, how are you doing? I'm thinking of you. Just wanted you to know that there's somebody out there who cares about what's going on. And, hey, I'm in Santa Monica today. Would you like to have lunch? And, you know, that particular day, I just wasn't really ready to emerge and go into public because it was really soon. But I was so appreciative of him asking. I said, you know what? Thank you so much. I don't think I'm ready to really go into public. I was still crying too much, and I just felt like I just needed to sort of snuggle with my dog. But it was like you said, there's people that surprise you, and you're like, wow, cool. So it's just, again, it's being grateful for all of it and not getting so judgmental about those people that you think they should be. And it's like, again, they have their reasons and you don't know why.
Right.
Yeah.
It's I. Someone once told me, don't make up a story.
Yeah.
Don't make up a story. You have no idea.
I've been teaching people in my conscious creation class about that of, you know, we create these fairy tales and that the real meaning, any event or person or the only meaning something has is the meaning we place upon it. And we don't often look at it that way, but it's like something happens and we immediately, based off of our history and our experience and our perspective and our beliefs and our self-esteem and all these things, we go, whoop, well, that means blah, 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 blah. That means, you know, you don't care about me, or that means nothing's ever going to work, or that means I can never lose weight or whatever. It doesn't necessarily mean that. That's just the meaning I'm saying it has. Doesn't make it fact.
Hmm. We've got, yeah, it is. We've got about 2 minutes to go. Elle, is there anything that we haven't asked you about that you wanted to cover before we run out of time here?
I think you guys have been pretty thorough. I mean, it's been a very enjoyable conversation. I love laughing with you, lady.
Yeah, we laugh a lot. We have some serious moments, but we laugh a lot.
I like the levity as well, because it is serious business, and I always, my business is the same thing, as I'm like, look, I know we're dealing with serious topics, and we're going deep, and we're getting, you know, talking about emotional integration and vulnerability, but then we can also make some jokes and laugh and have fun.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this before we go, mindful that there's 2 minutes left. Here's another blog of yours. Walk your own path. It's better to walk your own path ever so slowly than to swiftly and successfully live the life someone else has determined for you. Connect with your own truth. Be your best you. I love that.
Yeah, it's, again, something I've been really helping people in my Conscious Creation program work through is we're so often living by what our parents told us we were, or teachers told us we were going to be, or how our friends have labeled us, or what our spouse would like us to be. You know, we get into the noise of the world instead of continually to go inside and who am I really and who do I want to be? And it's not selfish because, again, the more you're filled up, the more you have to give. If you're depleted, there's only so much. You can sit there, you know, being like, oh, I'm doing everything for everybody else. But you're not doing it from such a rich place as you are when you're really in tap and in tune with who you are.
Well, what a great conversation. Thank you, Elle, for being with us. And everyone, yeah, thank you. And you can visit Elle's website again at inspired-success.com or find her on Facebook under Inspired Success, so facebook.com/inspired-success. And thank you. And Dr. Katie, have a beautiful day. And I think I'm just going to go sit out in the 55-mile-an-hour wind.
I was going to say, stay upright.
I don't know what else to do now. I think I'm inspired to be out there. All right, you guys. And then go down the street and knock on the door for dinner. All right. Lots of love. Well, take
love
care, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for
listening. Bye. Enjoy
and,
today. Bye.
Yeah, definitely enjoy today. And I just want to remind everybody that we'll be back Tuesday, February 3rd, with Diane from Natural Nutmeg. All right, take care, everyone. Have a great day. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.